So the comeback message today is called The Tale of Two Mountains. The title of today is called The Tale of Two Mountains. And the reason is because I want us to come around in faith today and believe that there are going to be more mountains in our lives. You're not going to die on the hill that you think you're dying on right now. Not if you have cast your lot with Jesus. Now, if you're floating on your own, you're calling the shots, you're running the show, you've told God you don't need him in the story, that's a treacherous place to be in life, but God's even working to move towards your life right now, even if that is you. But if you've decided, you know, and this is kind of the key thing for all of us, if you've decided, I want to go with Jesus, then I want to remind us all today that your story's not going to end on the hill that you're on today. You might be on a peak of excitement and success today. I hate to tell you, but your life's not going to end on that peak. There will be a valley on the other side of that peak. And if you're way down in the valley today, I want to remind you that your life's not going to end way down in the valley. Or if you're up on this pinnacle of depression or pinnacle of defeat or this pinnacle of collapse or pinnacle of foolishness or cancer or whatever it is, your story is not going to end on that mountain. If we decide in our heart, I want to go with Jesus, here's the big story today. Jesus is going to cross all the way over to the other side. And he's going to take us with him. And at the end of the day, we're going to stand in the fullness of the victory of Jesus. That's where we're all headed. And I think sometimes the enemy wants to interrupt our long arc journey with our short-term defeats and say, this is where you're going to stay. This is where you're going to live. This is going to be the sum of your life is this valley or this darkness or this breakdown in life. The character who's going to carry us through today is not an unfamiliar character to church people. If you're not a church person, he's not an unfamiliar character to you either because he's pretty well known. But I don't want us to shift into church mode too fast today. So when I say his name, don't go, oh, I know him and I know everything about him. Just hold on for a minute because the character that's going to carry us on this journey today is a man named Moses. The Moses. The original Moses. And the original Moses has two major mountains in his life and a lot of valleys in between. We see him, and I want us to sort of drop in on the sort of epitaph of his life, which is found in Hebrews chapter 11, which is known as, if you don't know, it's kind of known as the Hall of Spiritual Faith. And so when you read through chapter 11 of Hebrews, you start with faith. It begins with the confession. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Now, it doesn't mean it's some kind of silly, you know, just walking off into the darkness and saying, you know, you don't want to ever use your brain or you don't ever want to, you know, live in the real world, just live by faith, and you just walk out on this branch called faith in life. God isn't asking anybody here to disconnect our thinking or our wisdom or our reason or our brains. What he's saying is that the long arc of our lives isn't visible to us every single step of our lives. In other words, the promise that Jesus is going to finish the work that he started in you to the very end, that promise isn't always super clear and visible in the steps of life. There's some days in life where you go, I don't see how this is going to look like you finishing what you promised to start in me. This looks like a meltdown. This looks like a loss. This looks like a collapse. This looks like maybe that promise was good for everybody else, but not for me. And so faith is an essential element. It's not living without thinking. It's thinking about what God has promised more than what we see with our own eyes. So faith is being sure of what we hope for. So there's a question in that we don't have time to really dig into today. What are you hoping for? This is maybe one of the unasked questions of humanity. What is it that you're hoping for? And most people, you know, they answer that question, well, I'm hoping to make it to the weekend. The American culture has created the weekend. It might be the worst thing that ever happened to us. The only time most people in America ever said thank God was when it was Friday. It was so amazing, we named a restaurant after it. Is that restaurant still with us? Yeah, they're still around. So I don't know what you do in that restaurant on the other days of the week, but we've created a culture that says, my hope in life is to make it to the weekend or to whatever your day off is. I'm just trying to, you know, plow through the week, get through the stuff, get through class, get through my job, get through my traveling to Cleveland this week, and get home for the weekend because, man, the weekend's coming. And, you know, the weekends, I mean, what are the weekends? The weekends are just like the rest of the week. It's life. It's ups and downs and highs and lows and joy and sorrow. It's light and dark. It's health and lack of health. It's abundance and need. They're all the same days, but somehow in our mind, it's like, my hope in life is to make it to Friday. If I can make it to Friday, I'm going to be good. And God is saying, that's not a good enough long arc hope for this world. So what are we hoping for? Because faith is being sure of what we're hoping for. And what God wants us to be hoping for is that at the end of the day, we're going to stand face to face with the Son of Almighty God. And every tear is going to be wiped away. There's going to be no more sorrow, no more sickness, no more suffering, and no more death. And that is where we are headed in our journey with Jesus. That's the last stop in our journey with Jesus. That's the hope that we're hoping for. And you have to really lean into that in faith. And he says, to be certain of what we do not see. And then look at verse 2. This is what the ancients were commended for. And then he just gives us a little thumbnail sketch of the ancients, our fathers in faith. And then he comes up to where he gets to a point of saying, okay, I've named a bunch of people, but I can't name everybody, so let me just categorize a lot of people. And then he does something crazy that we're going to see at the end of the message today. He links that journey of the ancients of faith to our story right here sitting in this room today. And he says, we're all in this together. So let's don't read this today like, oh my goodness, this is like the, you know, the Terry Bradshaws of football, the Joe Namaths of football, the Joe Montanas of football. No, these are regular people like you and me. The people, Moses, a regular guy like you, an ordinary person like me is who all of these people are in this story. But God chooses to tell the story of their faith. And this is where Moses comes into the story in verse 23. By faith, Moses' parents, and I know we all kind of know Moses' story, but let's all sort of relive it today. By faith, Moses' parents, so not even Moses is in the hall of faith, Moses' parents are now in the hall of faith. They hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw that he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Now, we know that when Moses was born and the people of God were being oppressed by the Pharaoh was afraid that too many boys would be born. They would raise up to be men, and eventually he might have too many slaves to suppress. And so he told the midwives, if it's a boy when it's born, kill it. If it's a girl, let it live. And so Moses was born into that kind of struggle. He came out of the womb into the face of death. But yet there was faith in his parents. He was born outside of the control of those midwives, and his parents hid him away as a little bitty baby until he was too big to hide anymore. And then you remember the story, they put him in a basket and trusted him to the sovereign plans of God and put him in the river and shoved him downstream. Now, that may sound like bad parenting, but it ended up being a really good idea. Some of you have thought about that recently, I know, and you've been kind of saying, well, Moses worked for him, so we're going to try it. Take the kids down to the Chattahoochee, put them in a raft, and, you know, send them down to Alabama and see what happens. And so that's the beginning of the story. So Moses was born in a comeback culture. Before he even knew the surroundings, he's in a little basket floating down the river. And as the story unfolds, the Pharaoh's daughter and her attendants come out to the river, and here comes the basket, and The daughter discovers the basket. She opens it and sees the baby. The baby's beautiful and amazing, and she takes the baby in, and all of a sudden Moses goes from not being killed by the Pharaoh, but to actually becoming a little child who grows up in the goodwill of the house of the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh never knows the difference, but God has a master plan in place. Your parents can make decisions, but God has a master plan for your life. And this is what faith is needed for today, to believe in what we hope for, which is my mom and dad made decisions X, Y, and Z, but God still has me on a path and a plan to fulfill his promise to me. And so it goes on to describe this in the next verse. It says, verse 24, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, he refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. What does all that mean? It just simply means when Moses got old enough to understand who he was, where he came from, when he heard the story, you were picked up in a basket. Your parents are Hebrews. They have faith in the one true God, and they believed in God's plan and purpose for your life. And when he knew this, he looked at the palace, and he looked at his identity, and he said, man, I'm a son of the Pharaoh. I've got all this in my future. But he said, my people are being oppressed by all this, and I would rather link back up with my people than to skate in all of the abundance of the house of Pharaoh. And the story goes on. You know, remember the movie maybe, but if not, he saw one of the slave masters mistreating one of the Hebrews. He lost his temper, lost his cool. He struck the Egyptian and killed him. And when he did, he had to bolt and flee from the Pharaoh and flee from Egypt. And that's what Moses chose to do. Rather than to sit in the plenty of the palace of the Pharaoh, he understood that there's a purpose in his life, that God is calling him to something greater in his life. Verse 27 says, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people, because of Moses, passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. Just a little short story of the life of one guy who faced all kinds of challenges, but believed in the sovereign purpose of God in it all. Now, I want you to notice what is left out of the story. Can I ask you what's left out of the little summary of Moses? Well, a lot of things are left out of the little summary of Moses, because it's just a few verses of a man who lived to be over 100 years old. But what are the major things that are left out of the story? Can anybody tell me? What are the major things that are left out of the story? All the failure of Moses is left out of the story. It doesn't mean he didn't have failure, and it didn't mean that his failures weren't consequential. Please understand that. Just underline that. It doesn't mean that he didn't have failures, and it certainly doesn't mean that his failures were inconsequential. They were very consequential. It just means at the end of the life, God chose to look at the faithfulness of this ordinary man and to highlight for you and me the amazing ways his faith opened a door for all of us to experience what we have experienced in our lives and our relationship with Jesus. God is the God of the comeback. He's the God of the comeback. And he wants you to see yourself in Moses' shoes today. The three lies of the enemy are simple. We've been talking about them this whole series. Number one, you can't come back. That's the first lie of the enemy. And so when we find Moses in Exodus in the early chapters, we find him, he's fled Egypt. He's given up on the Pharaoh's household. He's in Midian keeping his father-in-law's flock. He's old at this time, like really, really old, and he's on the backside of nowhere is really how the scripture said it. He's not even on the front side of this mountain. He's on the backside of this mountain in the middle of nowhere, and the bush burns, remember? And a voice speaks. His name is called. The bush doesn't burn up, and Moses now finds himself face down on holy ground with the great I am that I am. So come on. God is finding a guy who seems like he's gone off track. Remember, born with a plan and parents of faith, set out on a salvation journey through the river, now raised up in the Pharaoh's household, so he's got training, equipping, he's got an education under him, he's got culture under him, he knows more about the Pharaoh and how he works than probably any other Hebrew who's ever lived to this point in time. So he's perfectly equipped to do what God's going to call him to do, but now decades have gone by, and he seems forgotten out of the story until the bush burns and the voice speaks, and God says, Moses, it's time for a comeback. And essentially is what we're saying here. It's time for you to get back in the story. It's time for you to get back in the plan. Here's what I'm going to do. I heard the cries. I've heard my people. I've seen how they're being oppressed. I've seen the slave drivers. I'm going to deliver them, Moses. It's time. I've been working it out the whole time, but now is the time. I'm going to set my people free. I'm going to deliver them from Egypt. I'm going to put them into the land that is flowing with milk and honey. I'm giving them their own land, the promised land. It's going to be their land forever until I return. And I need somebody to be my agent to go to Pharaoh, the most powerful man on earth. And Moses, you know what? You look like the best candidate to me. So I came to meet you on the backside of nowhere today to call you back into the story. I know you killed a guy in Egypt, but we're not talking about that today. We're talking about what I'm about to do for the people of God. Moses, are you with me? And of course, Moses fumbles right there. You want your story to be, and God found me on the floor. He found me in rehab. He found me at the end of my rope, and he spoke to me and called me out and lifted me up and invited me in, and then I said yes, and the rest is history. But Moses fumbled so big right there. He started stuttering and stammering and wondering and backing up, and he's like, what? Me? Huh? Where? Who? Pharaoh? I don't know. It says when he left Egypt, he wasn't afraid of the Pharaoh, but as he'd had some time to think about it in the backside of nowhere, apparently that fear had crept back in. And he needed another comeback. And he said to the Lord, my favorite interaction with humanity and deity, he says, who am I? He would have said, who am I? Who am I? I can't do this. And I love it. I love it. God did not say, oh, Moses, oh, dear Moses, you are amazing. Come on, Moses, look in the mirror. Look at how amazing you are. Here, here's this 7-DVD seminar on amazing. It's called I Am Amazing. I want you to watch it. I'm going to come back tomorrow. And you're going to feel so amazing tomorrow that you're going to know you can do this. And you're going to come back tomorrow and go, I am Moses. No, God said, oh, I'm sorry. I must not have made this clear. I'm going to go with you. God isn't looking for the most adequate people to fulfill the key roles in his kingdom plans on earth. He's looking for people who are confident in his adequacy to do what he has promised to do. And sometimes the breakdown is the best thing for us because it's the thing that gets us in touch with the fact that in and of ourselves, we can't pull it off. Because if you're not in touch with that yet, you're on the road to a breakdown of some kind. It's just a matter of time. But once you're broken down, God's like, now this is the person I'm talking about. Peter denies Jesus, gives up on the faith, goes back to Galilee and back to fishing. Jesus died, was buried, and was raised from the dead. And Mr. I'm going to be with you to the very end is back on the lake with the boys. So what does Jesus do? He comes and finds him on the lake and calls him to the shore. Why? Because he wants to use him to be the anchor of the church on earth. And he knew when he found him broken on that lake is when he was going to be the most ready to do what God had called him to do. And so when Peter said, I'll never deny you, these jokers may deny you, but I will never deny you. These jokers may bail, but I will give my life for you. Jesus didn't say, that's what I'm looking for. That's the kind of commitment I'm looking for. Father, do you hear that? We found our guy right here. Sign him up. Peter, you're ready to go. No, he waited until Peter understood that he was a denier of the faith, that he was the one who was going to bail out on Jesus, that he was the one who was going to run from Jerusalem, that he was the one who was going to go back to what he was doing before he met the Son of God. He was the one who was going to be sitting in the middle of the misery of that lake that night, thinking what a failure he was, or what a sham this faith was. And when he was at that point, Jesus said, now you're ready to be the rock on which I build my church. He said, do you love me? That's the only question Peter could answer affirmatively that day at breakfast on the beach. If he'd asked him, were you faithful to me? He would have been, mm-mm. If he said, did you do everything you promised? Mm-mm. Do you think you got what it takes? Mm-mm. The only thing Peter could answer that day in the affirmative, Jesus asked him, because he wanted it to be an affirmative moment before he sent him out to do what he had called him to do. And so he just asked him the one thing he knew he could answer. And he knows you can answer. A lot of you can answer this today. Not, have you been faithful? Did you do what you said you were going to do? Have you done what you promised to do? Did you stick in there to the very end? He knows that the answer to that is no. He already knows that. But he knows if he asks you today, in the middle of whatever it is you're stuck in, do you love me? That you can honestly say, Jesus, you know I love you. Oh, I've been an idiot. Oh, I've messed it all up. Oh, I've wrecked all the plans. But yes, I can still say that I love you. And he said to Peter, then feed my sheep. In other words, line number one is you can't come back. Well, Moses came back from the back of that mountain into the palace of the Pharaoh to deliver the nation of Israel, to stand at the shore of the Red Sea, to lift up the staff, to see the water parted, to lead the people out, and to be acclaimed as one of the greatest men of faith that we've ever known. He came back. But here's the other part of it. In the comeback that he had, there were multiple comebacks. In his comeback, there were setbacks. And in our comebacks, in most all of our comebacks, they're going to be setbacks. And the enemy will lie to us and say, your comeback's not real. Your comeback won't last. Look at you. You're struggling again. Look, you're back on your Sea of Galilee. You're back with your fisherman buddy. Look, see, what you thought God was going to do 2 months ago, now you realize that's really not going to happen, and it's probably all a big joke anyway. They're always, not always, but almost always setbacks in every comeback. And here's Moses, and he's, you know, led the people out of Egypt, but then he loses his temper again and strikes the rock. And when he does, he dishonors God. And God tells him in that moment, you're not going to make it all the way into the promised land. He's taken him up the first mountain, which is Sinai, where he saw the glory of God pass by, even though hidden face first in the crack of the mountain. He still glowed because Moses, it says, it was as if he saw the Lord face to face. Moses on Sinai, living high, amazing revelation, incredible encounter with God. And now Moses is hearing the word from God, you're not going to make it into the promised land. You're not going to cross over the Jordan River. You're not going to be the one that leads my people in to take what I've promised them, because you lashed out in anger. You struck the rock in a way that I didn't ask you to do.
you've cursed in this moment and doubted on my plans, and you're not going to be able to make it in. And so again, Moses got a setback in the middle of all these amazing things. It's like what we say. It's like two steps forward and what? Three steps back. That's the life of Moses. And so for some of you today, it's just to know that you can come back. For others of you today, it's to know that in the comeback, when you have the setbacks, it doesn't mean that God's through working on you. You just keep believing in the long arc plan. And then the last thing I love about Moses, and then we'll come to the conclusion, is that Moses shows us today that God can still use you mightily and powerfully even after you fail and need a comeback. Because there's somebody in this building today and you're thinking, I think I can probably make it back, but I can only make it back to about the fifth row from the back of the building today. I'll never be a front row person. I'll certainly never be, you know, really involved in leadership in the church. I'll certainly never be involved in, you know, leadership in the community. I'll never be one of those men or women that people look to and say, man, God has just put him or her in such an amazing position to influence people. I can get a limited comeback, meaning I can get just enough grace to get in the doors of the church and sit on the seventh row because the enemy's sitting back here telling me all the stuff that you did, you can get into the church, but you'll never lead the church. And I want to tell you, you can lead the church. You can be at the front of what God is doing. I'm not saying that there aren't consequences. I'm not saying that at all. There are consequences to a lot of our choices and our decisions and our failures. But God overwhelms those. And so we've got a guy now, Moses, who's killed a guy in Egypt, who's been on the backside of nowhere, who's leading people. He's leading people. He's the leader of the people. And so when God is looking at you today and he's looking at me today, he's not saying, well, you know, you can come back to here, but you can really never come back to here. And I want to say, why not? Peter denied Jesus to his face. Paul killed Christians and planted the New Testament church. Moses was a washout. The last stages of life. And God said, you're going to lift up the staff and the water is going to part at my command. And God wants you to see yourself today, not just barely eking in the back door of the church. God wants you to see yourself developing, growing, strengthening, and exercising the gifts that he's given you to lead his people on. And this kind of comeback is a God-glorifying, Jesus-exalting comeback. Because we've come from the depths, and God has placed us at the heights, so there's no pride in our position. There's only extreme confidence that God would use somebody like us. And so we diffuse the lies of the enemy today. I can come back. That's number one. And somebody's got to say that today. I can come back. This hall of faith is filled with people who came back. I mean, we ended Moses in verse 29. If you just skip over verse 30, which is Joshua's in the story now, and the walls of Jericho fall, and then look at verse 31. It's kind of crazy, but it's right there in the hall of faith. Verse 31, two verses down. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And I'm like, what kind of God in the hall of faith, where we're talking about Enoch, and we're talking about Abraham, and we're talking about Noah and Jacob and Moses, and we're talking about the fathers of our faith. And then we come to verse 31. Oh, and by the way, let me just slip in while we're talking about the hall of faith. Let me talk about this prostitute who made it into Hebrews chapter 11. And you're like, what? I mean, can we not just put that as a footnote? Can we just maybe put that in a lesser book, maybe back in Jude or something, you know? Hebrews 11, without faith, it's impossible to please God, because he who seeks after God believes that he is, and he's a rewarder of those who diligently pursue him. And in that story, you're going to write into that story the word, the actual word. And I know we got families in here, and some of you are going to have to explain that a little bit, but I mean, it's we're going to put that word right in this chapter for real? Can we not just say there was a woman and, you know, she had a story, but she made it? No, we want to put that word in there so that people will know you can have a comeback. You can have a comeback with God. No one is disqualified from the reach and the power of the grace and the mercy of God. No one. And you can have a comeback story. You most likely will have setbacks. So you're not going to make one decision and then it's going to be smooth sailing after that. You're not going to say, well, I think I want to pursue God and it's going to be smooth sailing after that. You're probably going to have a setback and then you're going to regroup and most likely you're going to have another setback. I mean, do you understand what I'm talking about? Few people have a story that says, man, I was in a mess and I just leaned toward God and everything has been perfect since then. But in every setback is the same opportunity. So, yes, if you have a habitual, lifelong pattern of doing the same things that you've always done to get you into the dilemma, then you need a spiritual growth evolution in your life. So we're not talking about, hey, you know, I got sober for a week, and then I went back to drinking for a month, and I got sober for a week, and I went back to drinking for a month, and praise God, I'm getting so many comebacks, it's unbelievable. I'm on my 100th comeback. No, nobody wants to hear that story. And nobody wants to champion that story. But you might get sober, and you might start down a comeback, and then you might make another bad decision and lose your business. Or you might make another bad decision and end up in a relationship that's tanking. Or you might make another bad decision and choose to put your resources somewhere that God didn't ask you to do that. Or you may make another bad decision and something else happens in life. Or you may hit a challenge or death or something outside of your control may crash into your life. And so it's not like I gave my life to Jesus and everything was amazing after that. It's like Mark 4, Jesus is teaching in the Sea of Galilee. So many people pressed him up against the water's edge that he had to back up into the lake and eventually he had to get in a boat. So he's in a boat teaching these thousands of people at the lake. And evening comes and he says to the disciples, already in a boat, Jesus is already in a boat. Come on, guys, let's go to the other side. Let's go across the lake. And they say, all right. So now they're in the boat that Jesus was already in. So they've got their theology right. The theology isn't, I need to get Jesus in my boat. The theology is, I need to get in Jesus' boat. And this is a big difference in how you and I live our lives. I need God to get in my new relationship and bless my new relationship. No, you need to get in a relationship with Jesus and say, whatever you're doing, wherever you're going, whatever you're about, that's what I want to be about. So they're in the boat with Jesus, with the promise that we're going to the other side. And that much later, the whole lake is in a tempest and the boat is going to go under. These are fishermen, so they're not thinking, oh my goodness, I feel a little breeze coming. No, they've been on the lake. They know when the boat's going down, and Jesus is sound asleep on the boat, and they shake him awake and say, what is wrong with you? Don't you care that we're all going under? And they don't have the sense to remember this guy has done miraculous things, and apparently he's not too concerned about going under. And so if he's not concerned about going under, then let's just, I don't know, maybe let's let him sleep. Let's get in there and watch him sleep. And if he wakes up and says, what's going on? I think we're going under. Then we're all jumping out. But if he keeps sleeping, we're just going to go, man, this storm is crazy. But he's still asleep. As long as he's asleep, I'm good. As long as he's asleep, I'm good. Because I know the Son of God is not drowning in the Sea of Galilee today. That is not going to be in Mark chapter 4. And then the waves and the wind blew against the boat, and the Almighty Creator, the Son of the Living God, drowned that day in Galilee. That's not going to be in the story. So I'm just watching him. He's sleeping. He's good. Might just wake him. Hey, you know the storm, right? Cool. All right, cool. Great. Just want to let you know. All right. Just want to make sure you weren't like, I know you preached all day, so I know that's a big thing, but you good? All right, we're good. Hold on, boys. You know. Just because you get in the boat with Jesus doesn't mean that you're not going to sail right into a storm. It just means that you have a promise in that storm that Jesus is going to the other side. Some of you, your divorce derailed you, and you have not yet been able to embrace the possibility and the promise that you are going to the other side.
that you are not going to die on a mountain called divorce. God has a long arc plan and a purpose for you. Some of you have had death come into your life. The storm was crazy. You've had all kind of collapse in your life, and the storms have been crazy. But here's the thing. If you're in the plan of Jesus, if you have joined your life with Jesus, you don't have to be perfect, but if you've signed up with Jesus to say, I'm with you, whatever you're doing, I'm doing, where you're going, I'm going, what you're thinking about, I'm thinking about, I cast my lot with you. If that's the decision of our lives, Jesus is going over to the other side. He's crossing all the way over, and we're going with him. And nobody's story is going to end at the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. Not one story in this building today is going to end at the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. Oh, the wind may be ripping the paint off the walls right now. But Jesus' sleep isn't indifference to our storm. He's trying to telegraph to us confidence in our storm. And you may have a setback, but every setback really honestly is just the same seedbed for the comeback, because you don't do one comeback in life. All of life is a comeback. Every morning is a comeback. Every time we kneel before the Almighty, it's a comeback. Every time we open the scripture, it's God, I don't know what I was thinking, but thank you for helping me see again what you're thinking. It's a perpetual comeback story, and you can come all the way back. So where does he leave us? He leaves us in verse 1 of chapter 12. Just close with these. So he's given us all this hope. Moses is just one of the people that we can sort of touch and feel. And he says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. In other words, since we know that we're running a bigger race than just to the weekend. We're not just trying to outrun cancer. We're actually running to Jesus at the end of the day. So we know that in that race, there's all these people. Moses is in the cloud of witnesses. You know, your mom, your dad, your grandmother, your grandfather, your spouse, they're in that cloud, some of you. The saints of the ages, they're in that cloud, and they're saying, we did our lap, now you do your lap. We ran our course, now you run your course. We're not asking you to part the Red Sea, but we are asking you to do that thing that God has put in your hands to do. We're not asking you to go and march around the walls of Jericho, but we are asking you to be faithful in Atlanta, Georgia, 2015, in that calling that God has put on your life. And he said, and so there's a great cloud around us today. We got to understand, we got to feel, we got to sense, we got to stay in touch with the cloud, people. So what do? We do these three things. We throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that entangles us. And so your comeback today is extraordinarily linked to your willingness today to cut ties with the lies in your life, right here and right now. Because this isn't some sort of pie-in-the-sky mystery wand that I can wave over us today. This is us waking up to the fact that Moses and the saints are cheering for us in the race that God has called us to run. And to run that race, we've got to cut ties with everything that's trying to slow us down. And I know that just the mention of that, the Spirit of God clarifies that for you and me, just like that. Here's what's got to go. 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 For you to run, this has got to go, because you're not running right now. Can I just tell you, she's keeping you from running right now. So that's as simple as it is. In the kindness of God, that relationship has got to go. It's got to go. Because you're not only not running into the destiny God has called you to, you are actually running away from the destiny that God has called you to. Yeah. The second thing he said is clear. He said, run with endurance and perseverance the race marked out for us, for you. Run the leg that God has given you to run today. That just means trust God that in your little leg of the race, that there's significance, there's meaning, there's purpose, there's God's story going on, there's God's plan going on. And you might say, well, Louie, my little leg of the race is insignificant and nobody sees me, and you know, I'm trying to do the right thing, but nobody even knows it. Well, the cloud of witnesses knows it.
Nobody sees me. Nobody ever affirms me. Nobody ever cheers for me. Nobody recognizes what I'm doing. Well, the cloud of witnesses does. Moses does. Well, I didn't get promoted. Well, the cloud of witnesses is promoting you. Heaven's cheering for you. There's something more important than having people see what your faithfulness looks like, and that is knowing that heaven is saying, awesome, keep going, it's worth it. He take it from a guy who started out in a basket, who knew what it meant to have a lot of bling, who ended up on the backside of nowhere, who when he met God face to face in a burning bush, he said, but. We're talking about a guy who had a blunder even after his comeback and had the bright majesty of being on the mountain with the glory of God on Sinai. It's worth it. Keep running. Keep running. Be faithful today. Cut ties and be faithful. How simple is that? Cut ties today and be faithful today. And then he said, set your gaze on Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And when we do that, he says, we will not grow weary, but we will stay in the race when we keep our gaze fixed on Jesus. So fast forward, they buried Moses. Well, God buried Moses. They don't know where they buried Moses. That's a pretty cool funeral, by the way, when God says, I got it from here, and then he takes you and buries you in a place that nobody knows because he loves you that much, even though you have made mistakes in your life. God says, you're not going into the promised land, but you're going to get an amazing funeral. And then you fast forward from the end of Deuteronomy, that last chapter, the burial of Moses. It's a powerful chapter. And it talks about the faithfulness of Moses in that chapter. So it's not like, man, this guy was a loser. We're going to go bury him. Somebody is not even going to know it. There's going to be a marker. If you go look for it, it's going to say, loser, buried here. No, God's saying, I got this one. This is the honor of heaven to bury this servant of mine because he is an extraordinary servant and I love him. And God buries Moses in the mystery of the mountain. How cool is that? But then you fast forward to the Gospels, Matthew 17. And Jesus takes some of his closest guys up onto a mountain. And as he goes a little ahead of them on the mountain, you remember this story? Light shines on the mountain. Jesus glows on the mountain. His clothes are glowing on the mountain. The glory of God is on the mountain with Jesus. The voice comes from heaven again. This is my son. I know it happened at his baptism, but it happened again on this day. Thunder and lightning. This is my son. This right here, guys, is my son. If you're going to build my church, you need to understand this is not just a guy. This is my son, and he's not just a man. Look at him. He's glowing right before you right now. This is heaven and earth colliding on a mountain. And as they looked, they saw another person on his right and another person on his left. And they were like, oh my goodness. They knew who they were. They didn't have Wikipedia. They couldn't look them up on their phones. But they knew who they were. Instantly, they had knowledge of who they were. And they said, that's Elijah and that's Moses. It's Jesus fulfilling the law and the prophets. It's Jesus completing the story of God. It's Jesus triumphing all of the prophets and what they promised us and all of the law and what it couldn't do. In the middle of it is this glorious Jesus who's doing what only he can do to redeem and restore and rescue men. And the little footnote of that story is they were in the promised land. And standing on the mountain in the promised land, just like God had said, was Moses, who had stumbled on the journey and got buried in the mystery and did not get to cross over Jordan until that day. And now he is over Jordan in the promised land with Jesus on another mountaintop because God is the God of the comeback. And the story ends with you and me. Come on, come on. The story ends. The story ends with you and me on a mountaintop with majesty. And you're going to make it all the way into everything God has promised you. And nobody could think quick enough to go, Moses, you weren't supposed to make it here. You got buried somewhere like, we don't know where, in the old country, out in the desert of Sinai. And he's like, yeah, I know, but I didn't stay dead. Pretty awesome, right? This Jesus, he's amazing. He's amazing. And that's what happens today when we fix our eyes on Jesus. We know that we're not going to die on this mountain, and we're not going to die in this valley. But there is a last standing place for you and me, and it is with the Son of God in glory. If we have put our faith in him and linked our life to his, we end on a mountain with him in glory. Cut ties, he says. Your comeback today is most likely waiting on you to see enough of the goodness and grace of God to cut ties. Your friends and family can't cut them for you. They've been trying for 3 years. You got to cut them today. Somebody else, just run your leg today. You don't have to run a marathon today for Jesus. Just run your leg today. Run in your lane today. You don't have to be a superstar like somebody next to you. Just run in your lane today. Just do what God's called you to do today. Because heaven cheers for Billy Graham in the same way heaven cheers for you. God is no respecter of persons, and he is not asking you to live somebody else's calling. He's asking you to be faithful in your lane today. And keep your gaze today on Jesus.